For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Welcome into a new edition of Going Deep Buffalo. I'm your host today, Kevin Masseri, as always, here with Kevin Syracuse to talk about the halfway point of training camp. Lots going on. Safety room. Want to dive into that a little bit, as well as what's going on in the Bills offense. There's been plenty of news and nuggets to go around. And will the Bills actually ever spend this money? Maybe we'll touch on that a little bit to see what might be going on within the Bills locker room. But first and foremost, this show is brought to you by the Summit Center, some of the best autism care in Western New York.
Tonight's show is also brought to you by Dave Dengler and the Larson Timko Funeral Home in Fredonia. Larson Timko Funeral Home offering 100% fully guaranteed price and pre-arranged funeral plans with live streaming available. You can give them a call at 716-679-9000 or visit their website at LarsonTimkoFuneralHome.com.
And there you have it. Thank you to our show sponsors as always, but we have had the halfway point. This went fast, right? So what's your just initial reaction from this, the first half? Camp's already, I mean, it's so short nowadays, kind of. What's some of your initial reactions of being halfway there? The red and blue scrimmage is Friday. Got a practice here Thursday. Training or the first preseason game exactly a week away from Saturday. So it's going to come fast and furious. Maybe we'll get a little bit of a Bears-Bills preview. Will we see Caleb Williams maybe a little bit next week? So there's plenty to talk about. So, Kevin, how are you feeling just generally through the halfway point of training camp?
I really didn't realize that we were halfway through training camp. Like when we were talking about getting ready for the show last night and you said we're halfway through camp, I was like, what do you mean? It's still July. But then I looked at the schedule and I was like, oh, yeah, this is a halfway point because they've had, what, six practices so far? And then they're going to have six more plus a blue and red scrimmage. So just like that, we're halfway through the St. John Fisher portion of the summer. And then it'll be back in Orchard Park and then getting ready for the preseason and then the regular season.
And it is. Yeah, that's right. And we're going to also have a Hall of Fame game. So, I mean, there's definitely going to be, we're going to check out these new kickoffs, see how this thing looks. That's going to be interesting. So definitely going to tune in to that. You know, there's not much else to take from the first preseason game. It's really early. No one plays, but I'm definitely going to check out some of that. See if there's anything that I need to notice with the kickoff rules or the new rules in general. But that's going to be a sight to see, Kevin, to kind of see this, how this new kickoff, this kickoff stuff plays out. But let's dive into the Bills. Then we'll get into some high level stuff. So we've had fairly healthy training camp for the most part. A few injury bugs have popped up lately, most notably to the safety room. We see Mike Edwards week to week with a hamstring, Cole Bishop, with a dangling arm that's wrapped up. By all accounts, probably not great news. So we're going to start there. Then obviously within the rest of the you know, the team. You got a few other nicks and crannies going on with a couple other position groups. You know, we saw Alec Anderson leap to the hospital. That was scary. Hopefully everything's okay there, as he's clearly the number two center right now, per, you know, he's getting all the reps right now behind not Cedric Van Pran Granger. So, you know, hope everything goes well with that. Obviously the other, Mike Edwards is out too with a concussion, really reserve lineman there as well. So, not crazy on the injury front, but a couple of concerning ones, most notably at the safety position, that's causing the Bills to sign Kareem Jackson as well as Terrell Burgess. Two totally different style players, however, have had some experience. Burgess with the 2020 Rams. So he's experienced back with rap a little bit. So that should be interesting. Kareem Jackson's been pretty good, converted corner way early on in his career. He's been a really good football player. Has been noted for some cheap shots throughout his career, that was suspended a lot, but he's still playing at a decently high level, and was a guy I was actually pretty interested in coming in last year in free agency, because I thought he had a lot in the tank, could back up Poyer, especially if the Bills were unable to sign Poyer. So he's two interesting names, Kevin. So with the injuries to safety, the two new signings, Micah Hyde still floating around. What is your opinion? How are you feeling? Are you concerned at these safeties? What's going on at safety already? Taylor Rapp seems to be entrenched right now, so that's at least good. But what's your reaction at the safety group?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit concerning, especially when not one but two potential starters are now down for, it seems like, multiple weeks. Now, with Mike Edwards being week to week, that could mean 2 weeks. That could mean four, six, eight. You know, we don't know. So we don't want to speculate too much, especially like with Cole Bishop. Like you said, it doesn't seem like a good result, as he had his arm wrapped, but maybe we're looking at a better diagnosis than initially received, because you just don't know. So maybe they're going to be ready for the regular season. Maybe they're going to have to be put on IR, short-term IR. I don't want to speculate too much, but I think these signings are kind of like those mid-tier, okay, this is going to get us through camp, and then if we have to put them on IR, they will get us through the first few games. Like, I guess what I'm trying to say is, if these were serious, serious injuries and they're both done for the year, I'm calling Justin Simmons and or Micah Hyde. But if you're calling Terrell Burgess and Kareem Jackson, that seems like, yeah, the injuries are concerning, because you have to have enough camp bodies during the summer and you want these guys to get in and learn the system, but I don't think it's panic mode.
I think that I've got my guy banged up, Bill. I should have brought him on today just for like a 15-minute segment. He's always good for it, Dr. Kyle Trimble. But I didn't want to waste his time yet. Maybe we'll bring him on soon if these compile or there's more injuries. But if you think about it from a statistical standpoint, with the kind of hamstring injury that Dr. Kyle Trimble thinks that he has, he's saying like right at 14 days is right for Mike Edwards, maybe even in time to play in the third preseason game. So, and by all accounts, look, Terrell Bernard was the starter. He came in day one and was solid. He was one of the best defenders on the field, didn't play at all in training camp. He played a lot of training camp, but didn't play in any of the preseason games last year. If the Bills feel comfortable with you knowing the scheme, you're in meetings, it's not like you're away from the team, or you're learning the playbook, and you're already a veteran in Mike Edwards' case, at least he's not a rookie. I do believe that with the 2 week, he should come back and be the starter. My opinion right now, I think Edwards is a starter. So we'll see how bad the injury ends up being. But by all accounts and by the research done by Banged Up Bills, we're looking at 2 weeks on Mike Edwards. That's based on what I've heard as well from checking around for some people I know. Now, Cole Bishop's a little more ominous. We don't know exactly what's bothering him in his arm. I've heard some stuff that it should be very short term, but then I heard a conflicting report from someone I know that it's not looking good. So were the terms that he used. I don't know what not looking good means, if that's just like, he's going to miss training camp, or if not looking good means like he's going to miss a portion of the season. I don't know what you could do to your arm that would miss. I mean, you could break your arm, I guess, where you would miss a large portion of the early part of the season. But we'll have to wait and see, or if it's something temporary. I'd like to see Mike Edwards step in and be the starter there. Cole Bishop was just starting to pop. And then DeMar Hamlin, he's gotten first team reps. It's something that we saw when we talked last time, but he seems to be in and around at the strong safety and the versatile safety position now more than ever. I mean, he's in the running. He's definitely more on the roster than we initially thought, Kevin. And now you have Kareem Jackson in there. I don't know. I think Kareem Jackson could come in and start too, to help this veteran, be a veteran in this locker room too. So Kareem Jackson's a nice looking player. Let's get into him now, and we'll get your opinions on this. So played both in Denver and Houston last year, came in at the end of the season, and then played in the playoffs in Cleveland against Cleveland last year. Kind of plays all over, 121 snaps in the box, 271 at free, 71 in the slot, most likely covering tight ends. He's a really good tackler, pretty good coverage guy, one of the best coverage safeties in the league. That maybe goes back to his cornerback days. And in totality, he has played 3,100 snaps in the slot, 2,800 snaps at free safety, and 1,700 snaps in the box. So he's played all three at a pretty high level, and he's been a really good coverage guy since his conversion to safety. He was a good coverage guy even in his corner days back in Houston. He's done a little bit of everything. He's a solid football player. By all accounts, was one of the top safeties that were available, has signed pretty decent deals. What are your initial reactions to someone like Kareem Jackson, who's probably just more signing, like more in the lines of a, I don't know, like definitely like more than a Linville Joseph. What are your initial reactions to signing someone like him, who's probably more than just camp fodder?
My initial reaction was actually, this is a guy that I was looking for. Remember how we've been talking about finding that boundary corner? And I'm like, who's going to be like that 35-year-old locker room guy who can add a little bit of juice on the field if you need him to, but he's probably just going to be like that locker room presence. He can help coach up these younger guys. And that's Kareem Jackson. Now he is a converted safety now. And with those injuries, I mean, I'm sure the Bills would be looking at him at safety, but who knows? Maybe they'll say, hey, if we need you in a pinch, you can play some corner for us. So remember when I was trying to find those names, I was like, man, who have the Bills had recently where it's just like, you don't really provide much, but like you're there for a reason. And one of the big names that I forgot was Dean Marlowe, just like that savvy veteran who knows the system. And I think this is like that Dean Marlowe signing. And, you know, I'm looking at the stats here, and Kareem Jackson actually had 94 tackles in 2022 for the Broncos. He started all 17 games. So it seems like this guy still has some juice left in the tank at 36 years old.
I think so too. I think he's a sneaky signing, and I think that, you know, he's one that if Mike Edwards isn't ready, I think he's a starter. We'll see obviously how he adapts in the coming days here. But I think he's very much going to rise the ranks of number two in this number twos in the start with, but I think he's going to go to number one and be the guy next to Rat pretty shortly. I mean, his experience is going to stick out. I mean, he's competing at the moment with DeMar Hamlin and Dee Delaney and whoever else that they're going to have, going through that, Terrell Burgess. I think that Kareem Jackson didn't sign to play to be inactive on game day. I think he's very much so a third safety at the minimum, but I think that he's going to be able to come in and start. That's my initial prediction. He's a good football player. His issue is suspensions. He had a pretty cheap. He's had cheap shot after cheap shot. I've commented on some of them on my own X account of him being like a pretty dirty player. So I hope that side of it cleans up. You know, his hits have left players hurt. He's a very hard hitting type of player. He signed last year for a $2.6 million deal. So he's signing like fairly decent sized contracts, $2 million in 2022, $5 million in 2021, 3-year, $33 million deal he signed in 2019 to 2021. So he's had some pretty decent size. He's made $80 million in his career. So he's had some pretty decent contracts since he was drafted way back in 2010 with his rookie deal, then immediately signed a $34 million extension right into that $33 million free agent deal with Denver. So he's been somebody that's coveted. His tape pops to me. He's a good football player since his conversion at safety back in that contract that I mentioned back in 2019 as he converted to Denver, the 3-year $33 million to play safety. So he's had plenty of years at that, but can certainly play corner, Kevin, in a pinch, kind of that guy that you are looking for. For a depth player at this point in camp, that's about what I expected the Bills to start bringing in a 13-year vet. He's going to be 36 years old. He's going to be a nice addition to it. I think at this stage, unless I can see a couple of these injury rehabs come quicker, I think he could be your opening day starter and bring that veteran experience that Micah Hyde would bring. So with that being said, what do you think about that? And then obviously, what do you think about them not going to Micah Hyde with one of these two safety signings?
Well, I guess I'll just reiterate what I already said. I feel like this is like that perfect signing where it's, hey, we think Mike Edwards is going to be able to recover fairly quickly, and he's going to be able to get back on the practice field, maybe play some preseason snaps and then the regular season. But just in case, here is this really good veteran who can add some added value to not only the locker room, but also on the field. So that's why I feel like, you know, with Mike Edwards being the projected free safety, I would think that Kareem Jackson at this point of his career is looked at as a free safety. I think that's your gauge right there. Like, if Mike Edwards had a serious injury, like let's say he tore his ACL, I think you're calling another former Bronco, and that's Justin Simmons. But because this is a tweaked hamstring, you can say, okay, let's scale it back a little bit and we'll get Kareem Jackson. And by the way, real quick, 2010, that was year CJ Spiller was drafted. Isn't that crazy?
It is crazy. Now, compared to Micah Hyde, though, I know you probably have some opinions on Micah Hyde. Very similar age, similar style career. Obviously, you know, Mike Hyde's been really good for this team. Kareem Jackson's had some good years himself. He's got his hands on some football. He's been a really productive coverage guy. Kind of think we slept on this signing just because we figured at this point in camp, it's a camp fodder. A little different than Terrell Burgess. We'll talk about him in a moment. But the signing of Jackson's a little bit bigger than like just a standard guy that's, you know, undrafted free agent that you're going to maybe see what he can do. This is a guy that may have gotten more than vet minimum. We'll kind of have to see where the contract comes out when it's reported. I don't have anything on that. If anyone has seen anything, let us know. But I've been looking. I've not seen anything on what kind of one-year deal he signed. I don't know that he's going to play for vet minimum, considering he's always played for at least around $2 to $3 million minimum, has never really played for less than that in his career. So I am interested to see that. But same guys.
And he's still producing, too.
Yeah, still producing. He, outside of his cheap shots is what's kept him out of games. He doesn't have injury problems. What's kept him out of games has been multiple suspensions. And then the, I guess, obviously Denver felt like they needed to move on. Houston was like, absolutely, we'll take him, for late in the year for their playoff push. So why him over Micah Hyde? Give me your opinion on that. Cause it seems very similar to when you would bring in Micah Hyde.
Again, I think it's like the severity. Like if Mike Edwards was done for a long amount of time, like, again, if he tore his ACL or something where we're looking like, oh, he's not going to be back till October, November, December, then I think you would call like a Micah Hyde. But I think for now, maybe this is because Micah is still undecided. They say, okay, we're going to patch our way along here with Kareem Jackson. And then if this injury gets worse, or if Micah Hyde just gets FOMO and he doesn't like sitting around and he wants to get back on the field, then we'll give him a call. So I don't think that this necessarily eliminates Micah Hyde from playing football for the Buffalo Bills in 2024. I think it's just like one more extension to where it's like, okay, now an emergency, now we're going to call Micah Hyde. Like, I feel like we're going in stages. Like the first stage was probably, well, signing Mike Edwards. And the second stage was drafting Cole Bishop. And then maybe you could say the third stage is someone like Adee Delaney, like just patching it up with those guys. Now we're on the fourth stage. If it gets to stage number five, I think that's when you call Micah.
I think that, like, here's where I stand on the Micah Hyde situation. I think this was the stage because, like, ultimately, I mean, outside of like an ACL tear that you've, you know, you've been, knock on wood, that you've mentioned, I don't know what other situation could arise where you'd call him. I guess if he's just really wanting to set out camp, but he's going to lose valuable reps to someone like Kareem Jackson. They're very similar style of players at this age of their career, like at this stage of where they're at. So I don't think that with Kareem Jackson on the roster, I think that was your veteran. I think that's telling to me that Micah Hyde may not be in position. The Bills have felt like they could upgrade their roster with not only their younger players, but going with a Kareem Jackson at this point of his career. Now, if you dive into Kareem just a little bit more for a second, we'll get into Terrell Burgess. I want to talk about the receiver room, what's going to go on in offense, the running back position. We're going to talk about a lot of different things here tonight, but to kind of, I'm focusing a little bit on Kareem Jackson to start the show, because I think he's more than just your standard guy that's going to get cut in 2 weeks. I think that he could be your day one starter. We'll see how the injury and the health goes. Maybe Cole Bishop takes over for him. Does he start the year on designated for return IR with designated for return? And then at that point, I think that you could go see Cole Bishop. Could be the perfect situation for him to come in there. Mike Edwards slides into his natural third safety position that he's pretty in tune with in Kansas City. But if you look at what diving into some of the stats around Kareem Jackson, he's a really good coverage guy. He's gotten his hands on a lot of footballs in his career. And as I'm looking through some of the statistics, he got better as he got older, Kevin. His yards per reception's gone down. His yak has gone down in terms of what he's allowed. He's gotten his hands on plenty of footballs in his career. 22 interceptions. The Bills got to like that.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that he adds that added value because he knows how to play multiple positions. Now, do you know what specific defense he's been playing? Like, out of his 15 years in the league, has the defense that he's been a part of, is that similar to what McDermott preaches here and what he coaches and now with Bobby Babbage too? Like, do we know what system he thrives in? Because it kind of seems like this is a guy who can just pick up any system because he's seen so many things over the years where it's like, oh, yeah, you guys do it this way. Well, I'm used to doing it this way, but that's no problem because, you know, I know enough. I know the angles that I need to take. I know what the receivers are going to do by, what, my 16th year in the league.
Yeah, I mean, he's played in a lot of different, you know, situations. You know, he's been in a few Denver Broncos teams. He's obviously been on a lot of Houston teams, you know, last year being a lot different than what he would have played in the 2010 to 2018 years. So he's definitely seen some different style of defenses in his career. He was definitely a really solid corner just to begin with. So, like, he definitely was fairly decent and continued on his career with the safety conversion where Vic Fangio, so the Bills must have felt like there was some crossover with Vic Fangio, saw his potential as a safety. So, you know, I believe what I read was his first interception was off Ryan Tannehill. So I thought that was a funny little nugget. But he's definitely been somebody that has been successful with multiple different forms. And I believe Vic Fangio, I know he didn't have the world's best year last year. I'm interested to see what he does with the Eagles this year. The Miami Dolphins year. I mean, he just that those Dolphins rosters defensively, especially just never really can get it done. Is that roster by the end of the year when the Bills played him was just beat up. But more importantly, Vic Fangio saw him to be a really solid converted to safety player. And he runs a really aggressive style defense. And that's what we're going to see under Bobby Babbage is these new aggressive styles. And that's where Cole Bishop was starting to pop off. But that will go and play in the hand of a Kareem Jackson. So he started his suspension train back in 2019 when he got the final two games. He was suspended for the final two games there. And, you know, since then, you know, obviously he's had some questionable hits throughout his, you know, safety career, let's call it. But he's definitely a guy that's been around the ball a lot in his safety situation. And he's been a guy that's clinched a few games for his team and, you know, really helped develop around Patrick Surtain in 2021. I believe Patrick Surtain gives him credit for a lot of what he was able to do back in his early portion of his rookie career back in Denver. So that was a cool thing that I read as well. So to your point that you've brought up a few times now, there's that veteran presence there for Kareem Jackson that, you know, will help a Christian Benford. You know, there's not really that young of players on the roster at the corner position per se, but it could help someone like Cole Bishop continue to develop there. But Bobby Babbage is going to speak again for us tomorrow. So I'm sure he's going to have laid out some of these things that we're talking about, and maybe we'll even give us an update on Cole Bishop. But also signing was Terrell Burgess, a guy that they signed today after a workout. It is said, you know, based on what you've known, that he has a girlfriend in Buffalo. So pretty interesting connection that he actually was probably rooting to play for Buffalo for that specific reason and just happened to get a call from Brandon Bean saying, hey, come work out. And he did and, you know, secured over a couple of other players, and most notably Ryan Neal, a guy that's also played, you know, in that 2020 Rams team, the Super Bowl, has been a pretty sure tackler, can make the roster on special teams alone, can compete with the Delaney for a roster spot, was decent, you know, in his early portion of his career, nothing special. Played all over, 93 in the box, 154 at free, 87 in the slot. Anything you want to note on him? Give us what you think about Terrell Burgess real quick.
I think this is another signing that makes a lot of sense because we've been talking about the first 25 minutes of the show. The Bills are getting thin at safety with these injuries. And like you mentioned, he has a girlfriend here in Buffalo. So I think it just kind of worked hand in hand. And you mentioned how he was a former Ram. Now he gets to reunite with Taylor Rapp in the backfield, the defensive backfield, Von Miller, and David Edwards. So a lot of former Rams here on the Bills squad. So I think this was, maybe I shouldn't say a perfect signing, because I don't know the exact role that he's going to play. And I'm not sure if he's a lock by any means to make the 53-man roster. But I think this is definitely the right situation for Terrell Burgess, and I think he could thrive in it.
Depends on the injuries. Like, if the injuries, these two guys are out for a decent amount of time, he's got a pretty good shot. If not, I think he goes to the practice squad. He's only 25. You would think that he's not Kareem Jackson. So I think that he's going to have a really good shot to be on this roster. If those two guys end up being okay, I think he's going to go to the practice squad. It's probably be a guy that they want on the team that they can call up, play special teams. What these new special teams drill could sneak on the roster himself as well there. But I'm excited to see what he's able to do. Nice looking 8.1 RAS score. He's been, said to be, he was drafted in the third round. This isn't just a UDFA camp guy. He's, had a really good Senior Bowl tape, where we know Brandon Bean loves his Senior Bowl tape. Let me read you a couple quick things that I was able to find back from his training camp days, where everybody's like, well, who cares? But I'm going to read it anyway. Terrell Burgess was a top five safety on my board going into Mobile, and he's not going anywhere on my board. He had a good week. Really versatile player that opens your scheme up, can do anything. Also, Chris Trapasso has said, just smacked a pretty big grade on Terrell Burgess from Utah. Cole Bishop connection as well. Modern day safety with the athleticism to man up against slot receivers, high end instincts, things that all Sean McDermott likes, to stay and step ahead of his game in the run game. Love his game. So it doesn't really mean a ton to me, but honestly, those are some pretty decent praises to say about a player pre-draft and to go on day two. So there's definitely some talent there coming out of Utah. Cole Bishop filling in from him in his career later on at Utah. So that's a pretty cool update. So we'll see if that amounts to anything, or if he'll just get cut on cut down day. So
These signings are very interesting, because they're like right in the middle. We kind of mentioned this already, how they're not like the Justin Simmons, Micah Hyde, where it's like, oh, they have the name, the popularity, the experience. These guys are locks to make the roster, but they're not just these random guys off the street. Like, they have talent. They have a lot of value to what the Bills need, and they have a lot of versatility as well. So let's take a look at the depth chart now, because now I'm curious. Like, I'm just thinking about this in my head. Let's assume that Mike Edwards can recover from this. And again, we don't want to speak too much on Cole Bishop's injury without knowing, but let's just assume that everyone's healthy. You have Edwards and Taylor Rapp, who are my projected starters. Then originally you had Cole Bishop and, I'll just say, Damar Hamlin behind them with Dee Delaney. Now you add Kareem Jackson and Terrell Burgess. I mean, we were talking a couple weeks ago, Kevin, about how Damar Hamlin might be on the outside looking in. Like, where is everyone going to fit? I should mention Cam Lewis. Have we had an update on him? Do we know where he's playing, where he's getting snaps from?
Yeah, he's getting a lot of backup nickel snaps as well. So I think he's a lock.
I know. So they just love Cam Lewis. So, like,
yeah.
Someone's going to have to get cut here. And as much as I think Terrell Burgess could be a really nice, dare I say, chess piece for this Bills defense, even Kareem Jackson for that matter, with their experience and versatility, I just don't know how they're all going to make the roster, unless you're going to see guys being put on IR. And I really hope that's not the case.
Yeah, like I said, Burgess would probably need IR situations to make the roster. I mean, it just is what it is. I guess he could play super well over the next month. He's got a month, but ultimately, he's going to need IR situations to make the roster or be really good on special teams and beat out a guy like Cam Lewis. So there's a couple paths to the roster for someone like Burgess. The Bills, at this, especially in July 31st, they're not just signing guys to cut. Obviously, they want the depth there. They're going to see what he has in preseason. But if he can bring it in, he's going to probably play a lot. If he can bring it in preseason and show special teams ability, he's going to push himself at least. Like I said, I think he's a priority practice squad guy at this stage. But if any of these injuries amount to more, or there's future injuries, he absolutely could be, make the roster. So we're going to see how that turns out. But at this and the defense in total, what has been opinion on the defense in total from what you've read, seen, heard in camp? Von Miller has been said to be back. He's been playing super well at Oliver's, every bit as much as where he left off. Same with Greg Rousseau. You have the connection of Terrell Bernard and Matt Milano. And then you obviously have the corner play, Daquan Hardy getting in some situations in the nickel, Cam Lewis playing in the nickel as well behind Taron Johnson. You've had, you know, obviously we've talked about safety a lot. What is kind of your initial, to kind of wrap up our defensive portion, what is kind of your reaction on defense so far halfway through?
I will speak on the defense as a whole in a second. I just want to say one more thing about safety. So those guys that I listed, so there are eight safeties here who are very good talents here, and they can definitely make the team. But like, how many safeties are going to end up making this roster? So, I mean, I think it's like five at the most. We predicted four, but with the talent that they have now,
it's probably five now,
maybe five. So you're looking at three of those guys who aren't going to be here. So let's just say D Delaney gets cut. Maybe there's an IR stash and then someone else has to get cut. So maybe that's what you were saying. Like Terrell, I almost said Terrell Bernard, but Terrell Burgess, maybe he would be the odd man out. Kareem Jackson, if he just doesn't have that juice that we were talking about. I think DeMar is looking better and better. So I'm not going to say that he's going to be the last one to get cut anymore, but a lot can happen between now and when is cut down day? Is it the end of August or beginning of September?
It's always the first. They may move it around a little bit, but I would always plan on being like close a business on the first.
Okay. So either way, they have about a month to get this figured out. Now, as for the defense as a whole, I think that they're going to be fine, because if they could piece it together last year and do what they did, and we know how McDermott can coach them up, I think they're going to be fine. The key thing is, if they are banged up in the secondary, they have to be able to get pressure up front. Everything starts at the line of scrimmage. So it is vital that this defensive line can get some sacks and they can put some numbers up here. And you mentioned Von Miller. That is the main piece right there. Like outside of Josh Allen, I'd argue that Von Miller is one of the most important pieces to this Bills team this year, because if he's going, the rest of the defensive line will be going, because then you have to pay extra attention to Von, and that's going to open things up for Greg Brousseau, AJ Epenesa, Dwayne Smoot, who's been looking good so far, and the defensive tackles as well. And if they're eating, then the linebackers can roam around more freely. So that will, those two tiers right there will make that third tier look a little bit better. So even if they are a little bit hobbled on the back end, if you can win with that front seven, they're going to be in good shape.
Yeah, August 27th at 4 p.m. Tuesday. So exactly 4 weeks, just a little bit of 27 days will be the cut down day. So August 27th, so it's a Tuesday at 4 p.m. Then they have to set their active practice squad by the first, heading in there. It's a little early this year. It's a couple days earlier than normal. They can start setting their practice squad, obviously, on the 28th. And so I think they moved it up just a little bit to give. So they made it one cut down day last year, and then I feel like they moved it up just a little bit so people have a chance to move to new rosters and succeed. It looks like they're giving people like waiver claims. That will definitely be a pretty popular day 4 weeks from today. So on our show, we may be talking about any Bills claims that they have made, if they made any IR situations. So all of that, you know, be on a Tuesday, but then on our Wednesday show, we'll be able to talk about the final roster as well as any additional moves that they have made. So that'll be a pretty fun one 4 weeks from now. But that's kind of the timing of it. I believe that they did push it up just a little bit to get it done before Labor Day this year. So that should be give players over a week now to find and get into rosters and be on teams and be on practice squads, rather than pushing it to around Labor Day, which is generally where it's always been. So I kind of like that. We'll see how that all plays out, you know, in 4 weeks. But there's still lots of football to be played, lots of training, still half a training camp, plus three preseason games to get into before any of that kind of makes any sort of sense. And yes, Dwayne Smoot has been good. He's played all over so far with different positions. He can jump inside. You know, he's definitely not quite Leonard Floyd level, but the contract said to me that they were at least hoping to get out of him a decent level of production. Always has been a 5, 4, 5, 6, 7 sack guy. So they're hoping that, yes, they weren't able to pay the $10 million this year. Instead had to settle for more around the $2.5 to $3 million, but he's a good football player. And I definitely think another player, Kareem Jackson aside, that we're sleeping on is Smoot. I think that he's every bit as much as that defensive end that the Bills are hoping for come out of this. And Javon Solomon has made some plays as well at the defensive end position. So I'm excited. The defense has just got pads on. They haven't really had much to show us yet. There's a big week for the defense as we get into the scrimmage and then into the preseason. This is where they shine. The offense has already started to shine. This is where the defense begins to show, as Bobby Babich has said. This is their time to show what they've been itching to show with their aggressive style defense. So really looking forward to the next couple of days of practice, into the scrimmage, then into preseason next Saturday at 1 o'clock. But I really appreciate to our show sponsor, Summit Center, Dave Dangler at Larson Timko. If you could smash that like button, that means a lot to us here at the Going Deep Buffalo Show. If you're listening to us on demand, we really appreciate you guys as well. Obviously pop in anytime you're free to come to the live show, comment and chat with us. That would mean a ton to us. That really appreciated. But Kevin, good note. Vaughn played with Kareem in Denver. So there you have it. So they definitely like that 2020 team that stemmed from the Rams, and they have definitely like a lot of players from Denver that they positioned to early on. Before kind of their struggles most recently. But Kevin, break down a little bit for me what you think of this offense. So we've seen some really good motion plays. We had Joe Brady come on. He's been in the lab. He's been formulating plays to get players open. We've seen Keon Coleman play super well. We've seen the emergence of Ray Davis, obviously a few fumbles that have been reported. However, he's been super dynamic in the passing game. He ran a 50-yard touchdown, which was really impressive. As well as, the Ty Johnson injury. So he's going to be out for a little bit. So may push that Frank Gore situation we talked about on the show earlier as well. And then into players like Curtis Samuel, seems like he's going to have a nice home. Terrell Shavers right now making a push to be that sixth receiver. We knew somebody would come up. We talked about some of them. We knew that somebody would come up and really put some pressure. Hamler looks to be every bit as much as in the running, allowing to be a return man as well. Can he beat out Hardy and be the sixth receiver? Could be a benefit to the Bills to get a dual purpose out of him. So he's right in the running. Shavers is right in the running. Haven't heard a ton of Justin Shorter. Doesn't seem like he's there. And then Claypool has had some good moments, but has been hurt a couple of times there at the sixth receiver. And then MVS is finally starting to make plays. I still believe with his contract, he's every bit as much. And then Mac Hollins, all the stuff about Mac Hollins. Kevin, give me what you're thinking right now when it comes to this Bills offense and what we've seen Joe Brady in terms of saying that everybody is going to get theirs.
Yeah, everybody's going to eat. And I think that was the layout of how we kind of described this offseason and how they assessed their roster and how they went about building it. So I'm completely fine with what they're doing. Was there something about Brandon Ayuk today? Did something happen there?
Yeah, he was dapping people up, and it seemed like it was a goodbye training. He's going to talk to the front office. It does seem to be like he's going to get traded. But that could just be Brandon Ayuk being Brandon Ayuk. But it does seem every bit as much as it was seemingly like something's going to go down there.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of ominous. We talked about that a couple weeks ago on the show. If the Bills should trade for Brandon Ayuk or not. If they do, cool. If they don't, cool. I'm confident with this offense. And I think this is going to be an interesting year to see if Josh Allen can win a different way. If he can win without having that $30+ million wide receiver. And I think this is going to be one of those years where Brandon Bean said, you know what? I kind of had to rip the Band-Aid off. Let's just go see how it looks with a tight end potentially being that new wide receiver one. And a bunch of not no names or journeymen, but a bunch of puzzle pieces that we kind of threw together. We kind of threw it at the fan to see, or what's the saying, throw it at the fan, see what sticks, or whatever it's called. But they're kind of patching their way through here. So I'm confident, and I don't think that they need Brandon Ayuk. I mean, are there any rumors about where he could potentially land?
There's still that Tampa. There's still a lot of stuff with Tampa. So whatever it is about Tampa has been a rumor with Brandon Ayuk. I don't really know why he'd want to go there, but that's been the one that makes sense. I guess that's the one they've been talking about. And then obviously, I think cause they were interested around the draft. So we'll see if that amounts to anything. So it's going to be interesting. But that's what it was with Brandon Ayuk. So we'll track that and more. Still don't think it's crazy if the Bills go out and decide they want a primetime receiver, especially if they don't feel like Claypool showing up. Shavers is still a guy let's call it what it is. They want him on the practice squad. They don't probably feel like they need to use a roster spot on Terrell Shavers. you know, just as much as Andy Isabella last year or whoever. Like, that's a guy that I don't think they need to worry about getting stashed in someone else's practice squad. But they have time. He has time to prove that, like, no, I need to be on the roster. I'm going to show out during training camp. So he's right on the fringe to get that sixth receiver role.
Yeah, and for Chase Claypool's sake, he better hope that he can get healthy quick, because the longer he's out, the harder it's going to be to make this roster. Because, you know, I hate looking at it from an injury perspective, because when you actually have your roster and during the season, you always say, like, the old-fashioned statement is you don't lose your job due to an injury. Well, for training camp purposes, you kind of lose your job due to injury sometimes, because, like, if the coaches can't see you, if they're seeing that you're not that durable, then obviously injuries pop up. But, like, if you're not getting those reps, then how's that bad for Tyrell Shavers? Because he's only going to take advantage of that, and then the coaches are going to see, oh, wow, he looks really good. Sorry, Chase, there's nothing we can do. Like, you just simply weren't available for us to evaluate you. So for his sake, he better hope that he can get healthy quick, because I think I have settled on six wide receivers. You know, the Bills have kept five in the past. I was saying maybe they keep seven with the new kickoff rule if they want to keep KJ Hamler, and they still could based on the numbers game. But, you know, if they're potentially going to keep an extra safety now, I really doubt they're going to keep a seventh wide receiver. So if there's six wide receivers, I'm going to have MVS and Matt Collins as wide receivers four and five. So now I think we have to throw Shavers into that. It's Shavers, Claypool, Shorter, Hamler for one spot.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a big preseason for all of them. And I just think that Shavers has made the most movement. He showed out last year after his, like, I'm not kidding, I think it was game one or game two, he had like three straight drops. And I was like, get this guy off the field. Like, he, like, you can't have this from a backup. This isn't like your Gabe Davis, let alone Terrell Shavers. And it's like, then he came back and showed some stuff, and he can play special teams. And he was what, the number 12 recruit in all of football? Like, wasn't he above like a bunch of good players in his high school recruiting season? So he definitely comes in with that like Justin Shorter style of recruiting ability.
Yeah, he was above CeeDee Lamb, I think. I just saw that. Oh, Chris Trapasso tweeted it last night, I think, right? That he was ranked on CBS's big board number 12, did you say? Number 12 of wide receivers, and that was above CeeDee Lamb and someone else. I got to look it up now because I'm curious.
Yeah, it was a pretty good list of where he was ranked going into. Like, obviously, he signed it to Alabama. He's played in a couple schools, so he hasn't really stuck a whole lot. But it's going to be an interesting to see if he can finally make that big push to get to where he needs to be. Yeah, so Terrell Shavers was number 12 overall receiver in the country, ranked between Henry Ruggs and Jalen Reagor.
Yep, I'm on it right now.
Yep, behind Devontae Smith, Jerry Jeudy, and T. Higgins, but ahead of Nico Collins and CeeDee Lamb.
That was the other one, Nico Collins.
Yep.
So right, kind of like that Justin Shorter-like type of hype, where it's like, oh, he was the number one recruit ahead of Jalen Waddle and Amon-Ra St. Brown and Ja'Marr Chase, and in this case, Nico Collins and CeeDee Lamb. Well, there might only be one roster spot for not only the two of them, but throw in Chase Claypool and KJ Hamler on top of it.
And it was said he can play special teams. So I'm excited to see what we have from him. Obviously, you want one of these guys to come on. He wasn't my favorite player in camp as a rookie last year. But I'm here for his development. Definitely here to see what he can do. I just haven't seen enough from Justin Shorter for him to take the role. Brian Thompson has even showed out more to me than a couple of the other players. So I'm excited to see what he's able to bring to this roster. So I love preseason, man. How do you feel about real quickly? And then I want to talk about some offensive line stuff and a few other things. How do you feel about preseason just in general? Do you like it? Like, do you like preseason games? Or are you one of those people that tunes in for like 20 minutes and that's it?
Depending on my schedule. Like, if I can actually sit down and watch it, I will, because I like to evaluate. But if I'm busy, like, it's no sweat off my back where it's like, oh, I can't make the preseason game tonight. That's right, I'll just catch up on Twitter later. I do like preseason, though, because I feel like with the NFL trying to get to this 18-game schedule, which I'm in favor of because, I mean, the NFL is dominant. So if you can extend the season, push it back an extra week, it's got to get us through February, right? So, like, I'm all in favor of that. But then with that comes one less preseason game. And I understand because, like, you don't want to be playing them too much. I don't know. How do you feel about the format now? Because they used to have four games. Now it's three.
I hate the four.
We're getting the four. Yeah, we're getting closer and closer to two. I feel like you need at least three to evaluate, right? Because, like, I guess if you have two games, technically you say, okay, we're going to play the starters in one of them and then the reserves in the other. But, like, there's just so many people, like 91 guys on this roster. How are you going to evaluate all of them in just two games when you're also trying to get the starters reps too, you know?
What happened last year was the Bills picked their game two, and then they played them in game three because they didn't like the way that weird Steelers game that, you know, had some weird bounces and a couple of things. And they were like, yeah, no, we're going to play them at home as well. So the Bills needed that. I mean, Sean McDermott would tell you he likes the three. Like, he'll tell you right now he likes the three preseason game. If I was not a top premier player, top three on my roster, so the 60 other players, you know, you can flirt with that line is maybe it's the 50 other players. Like, you want the third. Like, that is your time to put out tape. So there's no way that you're – obviously, you can make a little bit more money when you do make it with the 18 games. Obviously, I like that, too, because it's even home games and away games. Again, I hate this, like, 9 away games, 8 home games, or vice versa. So to kind of answer my own question, I love preseason games. I watch every minute. I watch every play. I treat it as a regular season game, but even better for me because I'm evaluating players rather than evaluating the score. So I'm evaluating. It's kind of the reverse of a regular season game to where obviously I care every single play of what goes on and the starters. Now I don't really care. I want Josh to get a series. That's about where I end with the number ones. I want to see so many number twos and number threes. It does get sloppy and ugly as you get into threes and fours. And that doesn't equal good football like preseason game four. That's why I'm glad that's gone. But when it comes to like twos and threes, I love it. Like, I absolutely love watching who's going to be the last receiver, who's going to be the last running back, what's going on at the linebacker position, is Richard Garage going to make the team, et cetera. That stuff's really interesting to me because those players end up mattering. And I'm really interested to see, like, Dorian Williams and players like that, you know, I'm not going to say how pivotal they are to this roster this second, but they could become pretty pivotal, like Terrell Bernard or Christian Benford any second. I love preseason games. So I like the three games. I think the three games now are better than they used to be. The fourth game used to suck. The three games now, though, like games two and three are pretty decent. It's as good a football as you can get without it being obviously the regular season.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a double-edged sword because you're right. Like I'm more on your side. I do like the preseason. I like the chilled, laid back atmosphere of it. And I like to be able to evaluate without getting too stressed out where it's like, oh my God, we're losing. Like, okay, well, that's fine. Cause it's just preseason. But with that comes more injuries because the more that they're out there, someone like a Dorian Williams, he could be a pivotal piece of this defense. And what if he gets banged up because there's that third or fourth preseason game? So that's why you just have to be careful because it's just trying to find that right balance of playing enough, but not too much.
Yeah, for sure. And then, you know, players are making rosters across the league with those games as well. So I'm all for that. Will we see a lot of Ray Davis? Will we see a lot of Darrington Evans, guys, Frank Gore Jr., guys that now with this Ty Johnson? Ty Johnson's problem has always been, so let's talk a little bit more about running back for a minute. We're talking about O-line. Ty Johnson's problem is he's always hurt. Like, he is definitely in the category. He has shown some really good stuff in New York. I thought at one point could be definitely their RB2, but thought that he would be their RB1 previous to Breece Hall. But he's just never healthy. And he's showing it again, you know, coming up with some more soft tissue stuff. I don't know how much, you know, Joe Brady seems to like him. I don't know how much he needs to be available to be at least the RB3. But like, I think he's vulnerable at some point, especially Frank Gore Jr. and Darrington Evans, who is a special team returner, as well as always seems to be around the football, making rosters, always has shown some talent with catching the ball, breaking big runs. He's already done so far. And then don't forget, like, Frank Gore Jr., who has the pedigree. So at some point, Ty Johnson is tough for me because I really like the player. I just don't know that I can rely on him. And if I'm going to cut and put potentially Darrington Evans got picked, everyone's like, well, it's just Darrington Evans. He got picked up last year. He was on rosters. Frank Gore Jr. wouldn't be shocked. Running backs like Jarrett Patterson and players like that to that stature, like Frank Gore Jr., those guys do get claimed and put on other practice squads. So it's not just an automatic, like, okay, this is my reserve you know, reserve linebacker that I don't think anybody will touch. People have been touching players off the Bills roster for the last few years now. So I think that we can kind of remember that.
And right now, I would say Ty Johnson has a leg up on Chase Claypool simply because they saw him last year. Like, Joe Brady utilized him last year, and he played very well for the role that they gave him. Chase Claypool wasn't a Buffalo Bill last year. But this, I'll say the same thing for Ty Johnson that I said for Chase Claypool. The longer that he's out for, the more that it's going to, I don't want to say hurt his chances of making this team, but the harder it's going to be to evaluate. And it's going to be easier to say, wow, Frank Gore Jr. looks really good. I don't know what we're going to do with Ty Johnson. So do we know the duration of his injury? Because Claypool is at
hamstring as well. Hamstring. At least Claypool's day to day with the toe. He's got a hamstring, I would assume, similar to Mike Edwards.
So week to week, maybe he can be back within a couple of weeks to get some preseason action in.
Yes. Yep. Banged Up Bills reported yesterday that he thinks it's very similar to the time frame of Mike Edwards. Average time missed 19 days.
Okay. So let's take a look at those three players: Mike Edwards, Ty Johnson, and Chase Claypool. Guess, yeah. I bet you never would have thought that we'd be putting those three players in the same lump, especially if this was a few years ago. But here we are talking about the 2024 Bills. So Mike Edwards has the most leeway because he's probably going to not only make the team, but play a pivotal part. Mm-hmm. So you just want him to get back so he can learn the playbook and get familiar with his teammates. The other two guys here, Ty Johnson and Chase Claypool, this is more about an individual factor because you want them to get back for their own sake, so that the coaches can have enough time to evaluate them. And again, Ty Johnson has a little bit more leeway just because the Bills have seen him in that role before. So right now, I would say that Chase Claypool has the toughest shot at making this team, especially for the way that we just laid out the wide receiver room, specifically wide receiver six. So I would go with that order where it's like Mike Edwards is number one on that list, where it's like, okay, like, we want you healthy, but don't worry, you're a lock to make the team. Ty Johnson, we want you healthy because there's a chance you might get cut. Chase Claypool, you better get healthy because, like, it's an uphill battle for you.
Yeah, and I also think Claypool could be back soon. So I think he's got the leg up in terms of when he's coming back based on the injury prognosis. I think that he could be back tomorrow, the day-to-day with the toe. Maybe they wanted him to hit into this break today, into tomorrow, and maybe hopefully be able to suit up at least for the scrimmage. I would think that is what they're hoping for. But
so this shouldn't extend into like next week. You're saying he should be back by
I would think this weekend at the very latest, right after the scrimmage.
And that kind of balances the Ty Johnson factor out with it, you know, where it's like, yeah, Ty Johnson has a leg up from being a part of this offense last year, but now Claypool has a little bit of that leeway because he should be returning sooner.
Yeah, and Ty Johnson's had that long, big, heavy compression sleeve on his right leg throughout, you know, what I was able to spot throughout practice too. So, I mean, it's not great. I mean, I think he's at the moment probably okay, but not great. Like, I think that the problem with Ty Johnson right now is that, like, the Bills have to assess putting other guys on waivers. He's always hurt. So the Bills have to make sure, like, they feel comfortable even post this hamstring, whether it's 2 weeks or the third week. Like, the Bills are probably going to want to see him play in the third preseason game. Like, that probably goes for any of these guys, Mike Edwards even. I mean, it goes for a lot of newbies especially, but even Ty Johnson. Like, they need to know they're putting in a pretty premier spot who, generally speaking, will be active on game days into you. And if you're just always hurt, like, the Bills are going to put other guys on waivers that compromise them. So I think that although they know him, I think that they do need someone else to step up. It would take the form of Frank Gore Jr. or Darrington Evans to step up. Or there's a couple other guys. I like Jerick McKinnon to come in and be someone that they could sign. Will they go with Dalvin Cook, the brother of James Cook?
That'd be pretty spicy.
It's not crazy that they'll go out and do something, especially if there's one more injury. I tweeted it right when Ty Johnson got hurt, some of the options for the Bills. And everyone was like, why would the Bills sign a running back? Well, because the Bills really need to make sure they have a running back. And they flirted with Damien Harris last year, and they had Latavius Murray. They do like to have a fair amount of players on the roster at the running back position. They don't, you know, they're not just going to punt on that position, especially now with the way that this offense runs. Dalvin Cook, Jerick McKinnon, Matt Breida and Latavius Murray are obviously still free agents. Will the Bills see somebody they like in preseason? I don't know. I just don't think that you can compromise Ty Johnson. You can't just say, yeah, he played pretty good at times. I liked him. He's always hurt, man. Like, it isn't like a one-off like situation. I'm worried about Ty Johnson because the reason he's even on the Bills and the Jets were like, yeah, I'm going somewhere else, because he's shown a lot of great flashes, is because, you know, he actually started with Detroit, you know, got waived there. Then he was claimed by the Jets, tore his pack really early on in 2020, you know, got hurt again, you know, and toward the middle of his career. So he's just always kind of had that injury bug kind of pop up on him. So, you know, we'll have to see if the Bills, how much the Bills will evaluate some of those things, you know, early on in his career. So
does Frank Gore Jr. provide special teams value? Like, can he return? Because that's an extra element to Johnson's game.
I don't think he
can return kicks and punts. So that would give him another leg up. Darrington Evans, he does, right?
Yep, absolutely does. Yep. So
when you look at it that way, value. Yeah, like, Darrington Evans maybe has a stronger shot than maybe we're giving him credit for, because, you know, the Bills have seen him in the past. He's healthy now, and he can play special teams. I wouldn't be completely shocked. I guess I'd be a little bit surprised, but he could really find his way onto this roster.
He could. Yeah, I mean, I think we sleep a little bit on Darrington Evans. I remember him. He had a pretty decent game. I forget if it was against the Raiders. But he played pretty decent at times. I actually thought he might take over for their running back two position in Chicago at one point, because the Bears actually had him last year, then cut him. The Bills claimed him, put him on obviously through training camp. Then they picked him back up. So the Bears and then the Dolphins saw something in him too to actually pick him up too late in the year when they had a few of those running back injuries. So he's just a little bit more than just your typical guy that's guaranteed to get cut. He's been on rosters, and he's actually made rosters when he's been waived. So he's somebody to watch out for just a little bit, as he had a pretty, I thought he like made a decent play. Remember he was pretty decent in training camp last year. Do you remember that in July?
Yeah. Because on that same wavelength,
he had that big play, didn't he? In preseason. I thought he had a really big play, like an 80-yard play in preseason. I can't remember which game it was.
Was it last year that they played the Bears in the preseason and he like played really well against them, and then the Bills cut him and then the Bears picked him up on waivers after that?
I believe so. Yes.
Because I know there's that definite Chicago connection where he keeps bouncing back and forth, but I'm pretty sure that he like tore up the Bears in a Bills uniform. That was last year, right?
I thought it was last year. It was. Yeah. He ran for 77 yards and a touchdown last year.
Yeah. Did something else happen that game?
The
Bills won big, right?
Yes.
And the last time that they were in Chicago was the previous year, right? Because they had that Christmas.
Yeah, that blizzard. Christmas game. Yep.
And then
Christmas
they went there for game. The preseason. And now they play the Bears next week for preseason, right?
Yep. That's right.
Okay.
That's correct. So pretty
Chicago connection than maybe we realized. Don't forget Ryan Bates too.
Yep, Ryan Bates is over there. So we'll see. And Caleb Williams, we'll see if we see him, right? Because he's not going to play in the Hall of Fame game.
Yeah, that's right. Because that's tomorrow, Bears Texans, right?
Yep. So we'll see when we see him. Will we see how much will they play him in that Bills game? So
yeah,
that's to be noted. But anyways, let's talk a quick minute about the offensive line. I know, you know, we've talked about the offensive line a little bit, you know, a lot on this show. Here's kind of been the final breakdown so far. Dawkins, Edwards, McGovern, Torrence Brown hasn't really strayed too much from the start. That looks like very much entrenched as your starting unit outside of anything going wrong there. Second team has been Ryan Vandermark has been everywhere. Clapp has been right guard. Alec Anderson's been your backup center ahead of Cedric Van Paran Granger. Obviously, Alec Anderson was on the final, you know, was one of the top eight last year. Obviously, with Jermaine Ifedi being on the roster, he actually ended up getting cut, and Alec Anderson continued to be a guy that was active on game day. So you had Alec Anderson, you had Ryan Vandermark, so you had a couple players that were on the roster. So they're very much entrenched in this second unit now. Obviously, Lael Collins at left guard, interesting, and Grable, their draft choice, who actually had some pretty decent pre-draft ratings. he's very much entrenched right now. He's the guy that's on this roster, Kevin. We talk about the 10 offensive linemen, and we did on our pregame show, or excuse me, our pre-roster show, where we were breaking down our rosters. We were kind of figuring out who might be the guy that's going to make this roster. Is it going to be Garage? Is it going to be like, you know, Keaton Bills? Is it going to be Jarvis? It's very much right now. It's been Grable, their draft choice. I think they're sick of letting their draft choices go to other AFC East teams.
Yeah, so you said he's second team?
Your second team left tackle, yep. He's taking every snap at second team left tackle. Vandermark's
Ryan
second
Vandermark
team right tackle.
Is second team right, okay.
Yep.
I think the biggest nugget out of that bit right there is that Van Pran Granger is third team center, right?
And Grable and Vandermark have switched back and forth. I very much think both of them are pivotal players on this. They want to develop. I think he's a Cromer player. They very much want to develop Grable out of UCF. He's had a really good career. He actually went later than his pre-draft rankings. He was actually more in the fourth, fifth round type of player with really good potential. Ended up obviously going into the sixth round. But you know, Grable is a guy that I very much think is on the roster as of right now. And then there was times that, how about this one? You know, per my practice notes, Grable went to right guards and Collins went to right tackle. It just feels like Vandermark, Alec Anderson, Collins, and Grable are on the roster.
Yeah, that was the other part that I was going to say too, that Lael Collins, I had him projected as a backup right tackle to, I guess we're past this point, but you always want depth and competition for someone like a Spencer Brown. So I thought Vandermark would be the left tackle, second team. And then Collins.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I thought Collins would be the other tackle. But now it's Tylan Grable. So that's interesting. So they kicked Collins to the inside. He's getting some guard reps. And
yeah,
what
he struggled at tackle. He struggled at tackle, Lael Collins. He's a better guard.
Okay. So that kind of pushes Van Pran Granger down, not necessarily – because like he wouldn't play guard, right? Like Van Pran Granger isn't a guard.
Not by all accounts, no. He's playing, but the problem is they're actually giving Clapp, obviously he's second team left guard, but they're giving him center reps with the second team behind Alec Anderson. And it was said to me that Alec Anderson was told personally that he is the backup center on this roster. So it is an interesting situation to where like what is going on with Van Pran Granger, a guy that we thought could push number one. Is he even going to make the roster?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. Because like, if Will Clapp is getting reps at guard,
he's got to be that Will means, Clapp. He's got to.
Yeah. So if Clapp is at guard, and you have Alec Anderson at center, that just keeps pushing Van Pran Granger down further. Yeah, I mean that's 10 right there. So he's what, 11 right now?
He's 11th on the roster right now. So he needs. So then obviously we have this scary. 11. No, they're not keeping 11. So he has to beat out. I mean, his competition is, it looks like Grable is wanted. He has to beat out Will Clapp. That's how they're going to keep 10. And those 10 are the guys they're keeping right now. But Van Pran Granger is going to have to beat out Clapp. Like that's what he's going to have to do. I think they like the versatility of where Grable can play all over. Vandermark obviously has played all over. Alec Anderson plays every position from what, you know, I've been told. They're even trying to do that with Lael Collins. Clapp even has a little bit of versatility. And there is Van Pran Granger as backup center. I don't think they're going to want to expose him to waivers. We had this scary situation with Alec Anderson. I'm assuming heat stroke or some version of some form of dehydration, dizzy, lightheaded, low blood pressure, some variation of something along those lines. I'm not a doctor, but I would assume that that's what happened there. Obviously getting checked out at a local, I'm assuming went to Strong, great hospital, or I'm assuming that he was able to be fine and was released same day. I don't think you'll see him at least this is like Van Pran Granger's because he's going to probably get the bump to the second team. I don't know. Maybe Alec Anderson could be back as early as tomorrow, but I would assume they're going to rest him at least through this scrimmage in a month, maybe a week. They're going to want him to rest. I don't really know. Maybe he's completely fine and they're just like, here's an IV. So I don't really know how that's going to play, but this could be Van Pran Granger's shot at the center position. Because he's probably now going to get his second team center snaps. He's got to beat out Will Clapp, though. They're not keeping 11. They don't really want to expose him to waivers. And they really like, from all accounts, like what they're going to do with Grable. So, I know, obviously, you've talked about Van Pran Granger. What are your final thoughts here?
I guess it's an uphill battle, and we kind of locked him in. I mean, we were even talking about, can he give McGovern a run for his money as a starting center, just because it seemed like he was such like a prime candidate, and he really felled the Bills in the fifth round. And, you know, he had all these accolades in college. He blocked for James Cook, the continuity there. Now it looks like it's a bit of a struggle for him. And actually, I think we had Alec Anderson as our backup right guard. Mm-hmm. And that kind of inserts Will Clapp into that role, because now if they push him over to center, Will Clapp, because of his versatility, gets a nod at right guard. And Van Pran Granger is stuck on the outside looking in. So like, either way you look at it, it's an uphill battle.
I don't know yet. We're going to have to see what they do with training camp. I mean, he's going to have to get some time with the twos to make this roster. I don't know. Like, this is an interesting situation, not one. Like, I thought he was going to compete with the ones. I didn't know that he'd be flirting. Like, I figured that he'd start getting a rep or two with the threes. Like, just that's just how it is. But the fact of how much they like Grable is, I'm not saying that they're really correlated, other than, like, that's a roster spot, though. And, like, Clapp's versatility, what they're doing with Alec Anderson, it's a struggle right now for Van Pran Granger. That arm length is a question mark. It's the reason he fell. It certainly isn't his production is the reason he fell. Can he convert to the NFL level? He needs a big preseason. He needs these three preseason games to push off Will Clapp.
Would you agree that they're only going to keep one rookie? Like, between Grable, Van Pran Granger, and who's the other one? Travis Clayton.
Clayton gets a free pass, though.
He gets the exemption, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So he's even hurt or something. I don't know what's going on with him. He's getting a red shirt year. Yeah, he's getting a red shirt year.
So, I mean, I don't think, when you look at the numbers and the depth, I would almost feel like it'd be hard pressed to keep both of those rookies between Grable and Van Pran Granger.
Right. And that's what I was just saying, is I don't know how correlated they are. Like, other than it being a spot on the roster, they're really completely different players in a lot of ways. I mean, Grable's your backup swing tackle. He's going to basically kind of be what, you know, you use Vandermark for, but at the same time, like, not need Jermaine Ifedi again. They really shouldn't be correlated. But I guess in terms of raw numbers and where you're at, like, are you going to want your backups to be a pretty raw player in Vandermark who's developed, who's been pretty good at times now, and Grable and Alec Anderson and Van Pran Granger? I mean, that's four really young, untested players, which is great for development. However, like, at some point you need a veteran behind already, you know, a younger player in Osiris Torrance himself. So obviously your bookend tackles are fine. You know, McGovern has, you know, naturally recruited at center. That's where he was recruited to play at Penn State. And then David Edwards has shown that he's been a Super Bowl guard. So I guess they have a lot of veteran presence beside Osiris Torrance on the starting line. So that's not a huge deal. But as your backups, you're definitely going to want it. I think more, Kevin, how about that? And maybe Van Pran Granger, just out of pure draft status, rookie contract, development, it may actually come down to, is there a Clapp versus Lyle Collins battle? Like, do you think that that's more the battle, or do you think it's Van Pran Granger versus Clapp?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think I'm glad you kind of went down this route, because two things. Number one, I think Alec Anderson getting reps at center and them liking him at center is throwing everything off, because I think Van Pran Granger could have beat out Will Clapp for the backup center, but he can't beat him out for the backup right guard just because he doesn't have that versatility. So right. Anderson going over to center makes it harder for Van Pran Granger. And then,
Kevin, real quick on this front, though, like, do you need, well, before you finish, do you need Clapp and Lyle Collins, though? You have Alec Anderson, who plays all three of these roles, too, and tackle, even.
I was going to say,
do you need both of those, too? I think you only need one, though, right? Like, or am I missing something?
I was going to say, could Lyle Collins get cut? Because I thought they gave him a pretty hefty, wasn't it like a 1-year, $5 million deal with, like, some guaranteed money? It might have even been more than $5 million.
No, it wasn't more than $5 million, but let me take a look at what he did get.
If I remember, I thought there was a lot of guaranteed money, like, to the point where I was like, oh, I wasn't expecting that contract. Like,
1.75
for guaranteed.
Let's see how much of that is guaranteed. Guaranteed. It's not. Yeah. He got a fully guaranteed contract. However, it is only 1.75 million. It's not.
What? I thought it was $5 million.
No. No, I mean, Smoot got more than everybody thinks. Even MVS got a decent deal. But yeah, I'm looking at his contract now. 1.2 million base, 300,000 signing, 800K workout bonus, which I'm assuming he hit. Guaranteed at signing pretty much all of it after the workout bonus. So $1.5 million signing bonus plus 2024 salary per game, active game bonus to $10,000 a game for 170K. That's obviously not guaranteed unless he makes the roster, but so he's got the Bills will have to eat money in order to go that way. So it's not crazy amount of money. Once again, like it's enough to where they do believe that he's on the roster. I mean, Will Clapp is the guy that, you know, maybe ultimately the Bills say Lael Collins can do everything. Lael Collins and Alec Anderson can do everything Clapp can, and then let's just develop Vamper and Granger, right? Like, ultimately, that is his path to the roster. Yeah, Will Clapp only has a guaranteed at signing, 287, you know, 1.3 million. Yeah, I mean, he's very cuttable.
So let's look at it this way. Collins can play guard, left or right guard, and then he can play left or right tackle too, right? Or is it just right tackle?
I think just right tackle.
So we'll say he can play three out of the five positions, right?
Yes.
Will Clapp, center, right guard, and left guard, right? So he can play three positions. Vanpran Granger's one. Alec Anderson, he could probably play three positions. So I guess if you look at it that way, and if you want to develop Vanpran Granger, you could say we could probably get rid of one of those three position players, right? But we know how the Bills love their versatility. So it's like, why don't we just keep all three players who can play three different positions and just get rid of Vanpran Granger and hope that we can stash him on the practice squad?
Yeah, I mean, I think they ultimately don't want to expose Grable or Vanpran Granger to waivers and hope that because Clapp's a veteran, hopefully that Clapp will be your top free agent or practice squad offensive lineman, him and like Richard Garage. That's probably what they're thinking. And then, yeah, trading is always a possibility to build up trading, like all types of different players at the offensive line position, you know, guys that you never thought would get traded for fifth and sixth round picks. So they absolutely could go ahead and trade out of this group. Who would it be? Could it be a Will Clapp? That is always a possibility. Could they like do like a player trade, like Richard Garage for a backup running back? There's always that kind of stuff that could happen. So offensive line's interesting though. Like it definitely is interesting. I've liked the way that they've played so far in camp, and I'm, you know, pretty excited that they've stayed fairly healthy, knock on wood, at the offensive line spot.
So just to kind of wrap this up, do you think that Collins has an edge over Will Clapp? Like, would Will Clapp be the outlier here where you could either trade him or cut him?
Based on contract status, for sure. Now, how do they really care enough to save that money long term? I think the Bills would prefer to have Collins with his contract and what they thought he could be, knowing that he has that versatility, he has that ability. He's going to at least be better than Jermaine Ifedi. They're hoping for that, regardless of if he's getting beat by, you know, Von Miller or whoever at this stage, or Smoot or whoever he's been facing at whatever position he's been going against. We'll see what he plays in the preseason. That's where I'm going to take more out of this with pads on, especially at the offensive line, defensive line positions. So if he's solid there, the Bills obviously would prefer to have him at the tackle position, guard position, versatility.
Okay, yeah. So Will Clapp, or excuse me, Lael Collins just turned 31. Will Clapp is 28. So, I mean, just for the sake of conversation, Collins is 3 years older, but I don't think that should make a difference. Like 31 isn't that old for an offensive lineman.
No, it's not terribly old, no.
And like you said, with the contract, so like it doesn't make it that hard, you know, where it's like, oh my God, we just paid him $10 million. We can't cut him or we can't trade him. So I think like everything's kind of on the table.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. So I think that they go with, I think that they go with Lael Collins and Cedric Vanpran Granger at this point. Will Clapp on the outside looking in, but let's see how these three preseason games go. Let's see how everything is put together. These final practices, I need to see some with the twos before I can mock him on my roster. But the Bills could want to develop him. And it looks like Grable's safe. It looks like at this stage right now today, unless he's awful in these three preseason games, he's safe. He's on the roster. So I don't think the Bills are, I think the Bills are sick of exposing their depth offensive linemen to the way to waivers where they always get, they always get Jack Anderson. They always get claimed.
He was a sixth round pick out of UCF, right?
Yes. Yep. I was on the show. Yeah, we were on the show and he got picked, and I actually had a late fourth round grade on him. If I pull up my composite big board, which I'll do now, just for fun real quickly. I have him. Yeah. I have him in the 130s to 150 range. Obviously he went a lot later than that. So the Bills might've agreed. I think it was, we talked about Solomon, but I think that, Grable, was very much a player that they were like, huh, we have something here. We want to develop this guy. And we truly feel comfortable with him already playing multiple positions for a rookie. That's a telltale sign of the Bills trusting you. Like, they're not just like, okay, we want him to learn outside linebacker, or we want him to learn whatever. Like, if they're willing to transition him around the offense, that's usually a solid sign that he can be useful at many positions. Okay, so PFN, which I trust, had him 168th. ESPN had him 180. So he definitely was very much so a fourth to fifth round choice, went a little bit later, didn't go crazy later, but very much so an early day three pick who went late in day three.
Yeah. So, I mean, it'll be interesting because like when they picked him, I was just kind of like, eh, whatever, because actually you're right. Cause we were live and I remember saying that they took a like two tackles, right? Because what was the one position that I was saying that they should go after?
I mean, I know you wanted a boundary corner.
Oh, yeah. Back to the boundary corner. I thought they were going to take a corner, and they got a tackle and then another tackle with the international.
And then a slot, corner, yeah.
Yeah, so it seemed kind of redundant. So that's why I was just like, eh, whatever. These are just late fill-in, shoe-in picks. I'm not going to read into it too much, but it seems like there actually might be some meat on the bone here.
I think so, too. There's definitely some definite So we have, what did I want to pull up here? I have everyone else's, but I wanted to pull up, give me a second. This is pretty interesting. You know, we talk about it a lot on the show, but it is what it is. I don't care. I want to bring up, I have every other player almost on the roster, but I don't have his. But I want to bring this up to kind of show you like what the Bills are thinking right now. And if you take a look at his RAS score, 9.83, and the only thing holding him back was a pretty lean 306, which 6'6" is fine for me. 6'5" and a half. But 306, obviously he could bulk up a little. That vert and broad explosion grade is elite. Like, that's ridiculous from a offensive lineman. Was really fast and ran in the fours and the 40-yard dash. That 10-yard split, 169, super important, can get to the next level. The Bills see this athletic profile of Tylan Grable. And even myself included, out of Central Florida, I was like, meh. What are you going to do with this here? Who cares, right? But this is very much so a profile of somebody that could be important on this roster this season, Kevin.
Yeah, I forgot that his RAS was that good. Like, that's a lot of green right there. 9.83. You have a good chance of making the roster just based on that athletic profile. And maybe that was one of those picks where the Bills said, hey, like, we don't really need him, because maybe they thought that we're pretty good between Vandermark and Lael Collins at tackle, but let's just take him because he's the best player available on our board. He has the athleticism, he has a profile, and now you get the camp and you're like, oh yeah, this is really matching up. And as it turns out, Lael Collins is performing better at guard than he is at tackle. So congrats to us for picking him, you know, a little pat on the back for that.
Yeah, can't sleep on him. I think he's very much so someone that wouldn't be shocked if you see him in some form of sixth offensive line situation, or is very much so on the active game day roster. I don't think he's talked about enough. And as I see what their Bills are doing with him in different position groups, I'm pretty confident that he's getting closer and closer to the roster. So interesting note. Well, we'll see what they're able to do there with both him and Van Pran Granger.
I have a final question here from Nick Miller asking, who is your camp MVP so far?
Josh Allen.
Is that low hanging fruit though?
I don't know. It's a bad joke, I think. I mean, I'm going Keon Coleman. I did not expect him to be offensively like that productive so far. Like, it's just you know, going against, you know, one-on-ones and team drills. You can't get hit yet, really. I did not expect him to have that style of catch radius. He has been every bit as much of what I was looking for from this draft choice. And then you see with pads. So pads off, and you see, you know, you see him running wild in Kansas City in terms of, you know, the Bills passing on a specific player. I don't want to bring him. I don't want to draw Chiefs fans in here. And then getting absolutely destroyed off the line today when pads were on for the Chiefs with his small body frame. And then you look at Keon Coleman and you're like, okay, that's a totally different player. And it doesn't really matter if he's covered, because Christian Benford's had some great coverage on him. He catches everything. Like, so that is like a huge benefit. And like, he's making these acrobatic catches, keeping his feet in bounds. Like, at some point, like, that translates. It's not something where it's like, oh, that's just with that's without pads. And you know, he's been doing it with pads now, but that translates, that skill translates more than running open in an open field with shorts. Like, I'm sorry, Xavier Worthy, but you're going to have to do more than get blown up off the line of scrimmage. Because it's only going to get harder for you. And everyone's like, well, he's not going to get pressed. Only Sauce Gardner is going to press him. Like, absolutely not. There's going to be if he ever thinks he's going to go near the slot, he's going to absolutely get destroyed in the slot by linebackers. So that means he's going to be a boundary player, and he's going to go up against physical corners like Rasul Douglas or others who are just going to get in front of him. So at some point, like, he needs to make sure he's never jammed, because otherwise he's going to have a very short career. And if he can, and he'd be like Tyreek Hill, good for him. And that's, you know, he does have that kind of speed, but Keon Coleman's been the answer to that question. How about you?
I was going to say Coleman too, just because I think he's been a breath of fresh air to the wide receiver room and really to the offense as a whole, because taking a look at that. Oh, I guess it's just me here. We'll try to get Kevin back here in a moment. But when you take a look at that wide receiver room, what's been kind of plaguing this offense for the last couple of years for the Bills, and you could find multiple problems, but a bad attitude and drop balls. And what does Keon Coleman do? He has a great attitude and he catches everything. So I think, like I said, it's a breath of fresh air. And I think that, you know, I was very hard on him when he was coming out, because I was big on Xavier Leggett, and I thought that he had all the tools that the Bills needed. But when you look at it, maybe Coleman was actually the better fit here for what the Bills need. As Kevin's coming back, there we go. I was like, what's going on here? I don't know how much of that you caught, but I was just saying that
I heard it.
Okay. Yeah. So just to reiterate, like, Coleman's been a breath of fresh air because he catches everything and he has a great attitude. And between Stephon Diggs and Gabe Davis, drop balls and bad attitude with the diva mentality has been holding this team back, specifically in that wide receiver room. So I think that is exactly what the Bills needed, because when I was saying, like, oh man, I really want to save a kid or trade up for Brian Thomas, well, maybe I shouldn't have been so hard on Keon, because he has some of those attributes that don't necessarily show up on paper. Like he has the attributes that are great foundational pieces that will lead to good results on paper with some time.
Yeah, I was moving around my screens. I had some stats up. I was pulling for Grable, and then I moved my monitor and it kicked my webcam off because I use a pretty high def new camera. But when you look at, for me, I think Keon Coleman could also, I mean, maybe his whole low hanging fruit. I don't generally go for the first round choice on these answers, but he has been just every bit as much as what you would expect from a first round choice. Now I want to see it in preseason. And then I definitely need that to convert from preseason into regular season. But if Josh needs to make a concerted effort, at least one drive this preseason, if that's all he gets, fine. But I need to see him make a concerted effort to see what he can do against boundary corners. Just even if it's not the read, like I'd like to see Josh put one there just to see what happens, because I think that is, I mean, no one's going to blame Josh for doing anything, but I want to see him at least force him a ball, or when he's in tight coverage, see what he can do, or see how he is. He is said to have a really quick release and has shown that to me. But to give another answer than just Keon Coleman, it's been Curtis Samuel too. Like, he's not a guy I loved. Like, I was like, eh, like, he's always overpaid. He doesn't seem to like always like really do much. Every year he's like talked up as a guy that could be like a receiver too in offenses, and then never really to me amounts to it. And then people are like, well, Kevin, it's his, you know, since Cam Newton, it's really just these quarterbacks. That's what's going on. Like, he hasn't really done anything. Then it was Joe Brady. He lost Joe Brady. And, you know, really only been, he's been pretty healthy, which has been good. He's missed a game here or there. He missed 2021, which wasn't ideal. Signed a pretty big contract in Washington, didn't do a ton with it. So that's always scares me. I forget he's only 27, but with this offense and Joe Brady and what he was able to do with his one season with Joe Brady, like that gives me really happy thoughts that maybe he is a receiver too in production, to where like that 851 yards was pretty impressive with Joe Brady, and what he was able to do with 105 targets there. Like, I don't know. Curtis Samuel has shown me that like, maybe he is every bit as much as what can be more than like a John Brown when he was first signed. Right.
Yeah. You know, Curtis Samuel is like that perfect example of an annoying fantasy wide receiver, because like I've fallen into the trap over the last few years. I feel like you always pick them up on waivers. At least I do, where I'm like, Curtis Samuel, like there's so much potential there. I need a wide receiver for the week. I need a flex. Let me put him in because he's either boom or bust. And then you start him and he fizzles out and gives you like 2 points. And then you're like, okay, well, I don't want to cut him yet, so I'll just leave him on my bench. And then the next week he goes off for like 25 points. And then you're like, oh, should I start him again the next week? And it's just like a big headache. Like that is Curtis Samuel in a nutshell. But I think with this offense, you're going to see that steady production where he can get, from a fantasy standpoint, he can get like a consistent 10 to 20 points a week.
I think so too. And like, just remember his back in 2020, 851 yards on 97 targets and 77 receptions. He was pretty good in Carolina, just straight up, back when he had, Joe Brady, under helm, there as well. But then, you know, his Washington years weren't great, but that team's had so much turmoil and coaching changes and quarterbacks. He's been productive with his 90 targets at times. I mean, he catches a lot of balls. But you'd like to probably, he's only fumbled once, never lost a fumble. Isn't that interesting? He's never lost a fumble. He's fumbled once at there. So he actually lost one fumble in 2022 while rushing the ball. So I'm not exactly sure the context there. But then in 2020, you're forgetting the 200 yards on 41 carries that he had out of the backfield. So really in 2020, most people don't talk about this, but he was a 1,050 yard player, in 2020, an 800 yard player in 2019. So, and then in 2021, he gets hurt and then Joe Brady gets fired. So, I mean, that's pretty interesting. But so far right now, it would be the two receivers who I thought could truly be a weak position, as we always talk about, but it's a strength. And then you obviously have Mac Hollins, who's been a deep, like one of Josh Allen's favorites. Now everyone will remind me, well, so was Trent Sherfield. I just don't think they were ever on the same page when it came to the regular season, but Mac Hollins has a specific skill set that could work with Josh Allen. I don't really know what Trent Sherfield's was. I kind of bought into it myself. And it just ended up being nothing there. So that should be mightily. And then obviously there's Khalil Shakir. So this receiver room may be a step better than people are thinking, with Shakir, Mac Hollins, MVS finally making plays, Keon Coleman and Curtis Samuel. It's not got that number one, 1A alpha, but it's got a heck of a lot of number two receivers.
I would agree with you there. Interesting nugget that I just realized. Did you realize that Joe Burrow was Curtis Samuel's backup quarterback in 2016 at Ohio State?
No, I didn't realize that. No, but I, yeah, because it makes sense based on timing.
Because I was looking it up. I was like, what were Curtis Samuel's college stats here? And just to go back, just out of curiosity, if anyone else was interested, he really didn't do anything in 2014 or 2015. But then 2016, that's when... Okay, yeah. Now I'm just realizing he had rushing and receiving yards. So he ran 97 times for 771 yards and 8 touchdowns. And then he had 74 receptions for 865 yards and 7 touchdowns. The previous 2 years, he was barely eclipsing 300-400 yards from a rushing or receiving standpoint. So then I was like, okay, 2016, who was Ohio State's quarterback? It was JT Barrett, but then Joe Burrow was the backup. So it's interesting when you go back and piece all that together.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot to like here coming out. A lot of offensive line talk that we were able to hopefully we'll see how this plays out. See how this running back position plays out as well. I mean, I think there's worry around Cole Bishop to kind of sum up our early portion of the show, that arm dangling, where it was. Are they worried about a collarbone break? Are they worried about some type of shoulder area, the way it was dangling, a rib injury? Like, are they, what are they worried about in that shoulder region, really, to where they went out and signed multiple safeties? Could that be a long-term thing? There's definitely been some rumblings popping up that it could be long-term for Cole Bishop. So we'll see. Hopefully good news tomorrow comes, or the Bills going to get stung with a 3-month right off the bat. So we'll see how that turns out in the coming days. And maybe he'll have to be on IR into and maybe be able to show up at some point later in the season. So we'll see how all this plays out. I think everything else so far has been short term. I don't think there's any other long term. A lot of couple day injuries, you know, a couple heat effects with Alec Anderson, and then the concussion for the other Mike Edwards, and then a couple soft tissue things. So it hasn't been crazy. We talked about most of the injury stuff. But Kevin, what do you want to see out of this last day of padded practice into the red and the scrimmage coming up on Friday? Like, tell me about what you're feeling, what you're hoping to see out of all this. Like, what do you got? What do you got to look forward to as we go into next week, which will be a preseason game week?
Well, first of all, if anyone is going to the scrimmage, drop it in the comments, because I'm curious to see who has tickets. I might be going. I'm still not sure yet. I guess what I'm looking to see over these next couple of days is pretty much everything that we talked about. Like, how's the safety room looking? How's the offensive line looking? I think that is going to be a very, maybe even an underrated position group to watch here, because I think that Will Clapp and Alec Anderson and Cedric Van Pran Granger, and I'll throw Leo Collins in. Like, I think those four players, I think that's going to be a bigger battle than maybe a lot of people are giving them credit for, because the big battle is who's going to be the wide receiver 4, 5, and 6. So obviously that's what I'm going to be watching too, but I'm going to say that the offensive line is sneakily working its way up to the top in terms of like being this big summer battle here. So wide receiver, offensive line, safety.
Interesting time to play that 5:30 on Friday when people are coming home from work and it's going to hit a ton of traffic, and that's going to be a mess. Especially being in Buffalo and people hitting the 90 and getting into 219. That's just a mess. I don't know about that.
Part of the reason why I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to make it. Like, I thought it was going to be like 7, 8 o'clock, and I'm like, oh, it's 5:30. That's going to throw some things off.
Even like a 6:30, but like, I mean, that's a little insane. Like, you're running into rush hour, like, ugh. That's giving me like Monday Night Football vibes trying to get to that game. But I mean, usually Monday Night Football is at 8:30, but this year it's at 7:30. That Monday Night Football game against the Jags, 7:30, dual header, double header Monday Night game, which is interesting, but brutal for the workers and the roads of the Buffalo area. I'm pretty excited to see what happens at the scrimmage. I want to see how these offensive line combos work out. I want to see this motion offense in person. I'd like to see how this defense comes out at safety. I mean, obviously DeMar Hamlin's obviously going to hit the first crack out of this by default, which is very interesting that he by default is going to get the nod next to wrap. So I do think that Kareem Jackson takes his starting spot over, as we talked about early on in the show. So that'll be something to track for us here as the red and blue, as the scrimmage roll on. But in the preseason, there's definitely going to be some nuggets to take out of there. But ultimately, like, let's hope for good news from Cole Bishop, because that's really the only longer than a 14-day injury on this roster at the moment. So they don't even have anything long-term going on. So I'm really hoping it's not one of those rare breaks in the shoulder region. You know, there's definitely been some concern based on how it was wrapped and how it was hanging, that it could be a little bit more serious than just a simple like MRI situation. But there's definitely been some hope for that it's going to be minor. But like, that scapular fracture that is like right here in your shoulder is definitely of concern right now. Pretty rare injury. So I'm hoping it's because that's a 3 to 4 month rehab. That would put us where? August, September, October, like that would put us in, like, he wouldn't be able to come back to the second half of the season. And then as a rookie, what are you going to do? Like, you're going to, like, he did would lose most of training camp and that. So let's hope that it's something else. But at this stage, doesn't look great on the Cole Bishop front.
Well, let's end on a positive note. So what's one bit of positive news or something to look forward to that we can end with?
I think watch out for a couple things, like finish that up. Watch out for Kareem Jackson. He is a really good player. Honestly, he is an upgrade to that room, not just because Cole Bishop got hurt, but he is an upgraded player. He is a guy that could come in and start right now. I think I personally think he's an upgrade to Hamlin anyways. So we'll see. But Dalton Kincaid, yeah, that's a good one. Like Dalton Kincaid, like we didn't talk about him at all. And Dawson Knox, like here's like a lot of people have been saying, oh, he caught the ball. Like Dawson Knox has over 20 touchdowns. Like he has been a productive football player on this team. Yes, last year with the injury and it's kind of wasted trying to get used to this offense. They got rid of their offensive coordinator and Ken Dorsey. But this year, full strength, the dual tight end situation where we talked about the receivers every show, but that dual tight end situation, I'm super excited with Dalton Kincaid in this offense. The Bills have a lot of weapons. Like they don't have a Brandon Ayuk at the moment. They don't have a Justin Jefferson at the moment. They have a lot of really good players. And in this motion style offense, it's going to stretch people horizontally, just kind of like Mike McDaniel does. It's going to be a challenge for defenses to know where the ball's going to go. Josh isn't going to need to force feed it to anybody. So I think that there's a lot to look forward to with how good that this offense already looks. And Joe Brady gets a full year with his offense, finally, not just picking up Ken Dorsey's playbook and doing his best with running the ball. Cause quite frankly, that like wasn't his playbook. So he did whatever he could and then won a lot of games at the end of the year. So there's a lot to like about this offense. Normally you see the Jets struggling. You got Aaron Rodgers yelling at Garrett Wilson. You got a lot of problems there, but when it comes to the Bills offense, I haven't seen too many problems. Like it's been all good, which, you know, I even think under the Ken Dorsey era, there was definitely some problems, kind of reminiscent more of the Brian Daboll eras right now than the 2020, 2021 seasons than of the Ken Dorsey preseasons. So it's one of the been the best that Josh has looked, in my opinion. He's, you know, thread the needle. He's been absolute perfection. He lets his receivers make plays. So occasionally, you know, there's going to be a miscommunication with some of these new guys. There's been a few picks, but nothing that's concerning, nothing that would show up in a regular season game right now. So I'm really excited for what the Bills are able to do with this offense. You got some fans in here, Kevin.
Hey, and there's Harry. Ethan's dad saying, go Bills. What's up, Harry? Thanks for tuning in tonight.
And yeah, Joe Brady certainly picked up the slack as soon as, as soon as we could. I mean, this rushing offense is going to be important. I really like Ray Davis. I know he's put two, I think you said there's been a report of maybe a one or two fumbles that he's had, but I mean, he's been a really good player. We've talked a lot about the offensive line guys. We talked a lot about safety. Like Ray Davis, to me, can be a dynamic player in this offense. And great story. Really looking forward to seeing what Ray Davis is going to be, because right now he's pushing for some real snaps and he's been explosive. He's been at least like a Devin Singletary or better. So, you know, quite frankly, they're picked similar places. Like Devin was at the end of the third. I mean, I guess Ray was, you know, a little bit more in the middle of the fourth, but he's been a really good revelation for the Bills right now. So I'm excited to see him as we get into this first scrimmage. He'll get a lot of time there, and then into the preseason, where I do believe he'll get a lot of game time. And then, you know, he's going to play probably extensively in the third quarter, I would assume. Definitely get some second and third quarter action, as we go forward. No punter competition. We all said Browning would make the roster. It doesn't look like that's going to happen. It does look like Sam Martin and his contract. There's your first nugget to fall. That guaranteed money that was that ended up being escalated to be guaranteed for Sam Martin, like late in March, did end up mattering. And I think it will matter for Lyle Collins. And I think it will matter for MVS and Smoot, who's actually played good. But that's what I mean. That I think that some of that guaranteed money, the Bills don't want to cut them, eat the dead cap, and have to pay another player. That's silly business. Lyle Collins, MVS, Mac Hollins, a couple of those, Campbell Lewis, a couple of those guys are going to make the roster based on their dead cap hits. Even though they're not crazy big, the Bills are already playing with 28% less cap space because they're dead cap hits. So most people think they spend the most money in the league. This year, their cap hit is actually 20% less, 28% less. They're the second biggest dead cap hit in the league. So I don't think they're going to want to add to that with more dead cap. So those players are on the roster. Sam Martin has won his first battle of the season. So with all that being said, Kevin, bring us home. What do you got? You got any final thoughts for us tonight?
Go Yankees. Another big win today.
There you go. The Yankees are on a bender right now.
Jazz Chisholm saving the season.
So we're going to see what happens tomorrow with all this training camp news. All, you know, Bobby Babbage is going to talk. I'm sure Cole Bishop's going to talk or come up. And we'll, you know, we'll be back at you next Wednesday. We'll recap the scrimmage. I'm sure it'll be plenty distance from that at that point. Maybe bring on a Bears guy for a little bit. And we're going to break down what we perceive to be, start to think about how this final roster is going to play out into our final roster show. That'll be fun too. But from the Going Deep Buffalo show to our show sponsor, Summit Center, thanks everybody for sticking in here for an hour and 40 minutes. It's almost the top of the hour at 10 o'clock. The Summit Center, Dave Dangler and Larson Timko, please smash the like button for us. We really appreciate everybody being on here with us tonight. I'm Kevin. That's Kevin. We'll catch you guys back here as always, Wednesdays at 8 o'clock right here on the Built in Buffalo Podcast Network. We'll check you guys soon.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.